Today I want to talk about remorse. Christ in letter 8 says that remorse is essential to our cleansing of our consciousness and to advance spiritually. I'm not really sure how to do that, but this talk is really about my exploration of this idea. I'm going to read from letter 8 exactly what Christ said with regard to this. Remember what I am telling you now. You are residents of two dimensions, and none may pass beyond the dimensions of mere intellect until the prerequisites to spiritual enlightenment have been fulfilled. These are a true spiritual awakening leading to deep insight into the activities of the ego and selfhood, followed by remorse, remorse, remorse. This is the only way. For remorse, in turn, leads to the rejection of the magnetic emotional dimension of rejection bonding, which, in its more virulent forms, humans described as sin. When a person penetrates the spiritual dimension and is imbued with life characteristics, the person begins to realize and eventually know that the human ego drive to look out for the self actually shuts the soul off from the continuous inflow of divine life into the mind, heart, body, relationships, and daily experiences. So I go to not only Christ Returns as a reference, but also thefreedictionary.com, and I wanted to look up remorse so I could better understand it. And it's defined as a moral anguish arising from repentance for past misdeeds, bitter regret. Also, an emotional expression of personal regret felt by a person after he or she has committed an act which they deem to be shameful, hurtful, or violent. And I think I got this from Wikipedia. The expression of remorse may include a detailed account of the offense, acknowledgement of the hurt and damage done, acceptance of the responsibility for and ownership of the act or omission, an explanation that recognizes one's role, and a request for forgiveness. Seems to me that remorse might indicate that we're willing to experience the pain or the anguish of our actions and inactions, that is, our omissions. If this is true, what is being said in the book Leadership and Self-Deception, the acts of not doing something for another that we know we should do is self-betrayal. We still have those events in our energy field, kind of like splinters waiting to be extracted. So if we've caused pain, that pain is our rightful harvest, according to the law of cause and effect, also known as we reap what we sow. To refuse to reap what we sow, to accept responsibility for our actions, becomes very problematic. The list of ego characteristics that Christ lays out in letter 6 that we want to remove from our consciousness might be the good place to start so we can review our past experiences, our events, our doing and not doing, and feel remorse for having expressed them. And that list is criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander. You see a lot of that on TV, and certainly we can see a lot in our own lives as being the source of that in our expressions. So as I'm exploring this, I'm wondering if I make a list, maybe a mind map of the events that we regret and then we're willing to invest some time in focusing our attention on them, if that would and could lead to the healing effects of remorse. It did occur to me, and I don't know if this was ego speaking or whether this is wisdom speaking, that looking at that and all the things that we've done wrong and that are worthy of regret or remorse, it might overwhelm the immune system. It's like, wow, man, I looked at a million things that I've done that I wish I didn't do, and that could cave us in, and then we'd end up feeling the symptoms of that. That is, getting sick in one form or another, cold or flu-like symptoms. And so I thought, well, maybe that's my first driving need, right, to defend myself from criticism or emotional physical attack. So I don't want to admit that I did anything wrong. I don't want to admit that I'm not perfect. I don't. And so I could feel that impulse. I don't want to look at it. You know, the past is past. I don't believe that to be true. I think by looking at this stuff, we can set in motion some really deep healing that up to this point, maybe I and you have avoided. Maybe if we looked at this kind of situation as like, I got to get muddy, I got to get dirty, I got to dig around in this stuff to acquire, to discover some real valuable insights like diamonds or emeralds in the mud that are going to be tremendously helpful for our lives going forward. So I'm looking at this and saying, well, I could see there's a value in arranging remorse-worthy events chronologically, because I can do that starting from conception. We already know that being conceived put additional pressure on our parents, right? Before they had a child, now all of a sudden they're pregnant. They got to do things differently. That, it's like, I regret that my need to be alive has put this burden on you, even though, you know, you obviously participated in a physical act, so, you know, you're not without responsibility. But then we can come forward in time chronologically. But I can also see it by using that list of ego characteristics that I just referred to that Christ mentions, right? The sarcasm, judgmentalism, criticism, denigration, and so on. And look at any one of those and find events that match those experiences. It's like, I remember when I did that, when I did this, when I did that. So I decided, because I tend to be cerebral, and I think mentally this is how we avoid things, so maybe that's what's going on here too, but I started a mind map. And if this is the sort of thing that appeals to you, you're going to want to go and search, do a Google search on free mind, that's one word, free mind, mind mapping. And you're going to see a whole bunch of places you can download it. It's for free, but I recommend that you use freemind.sourceforge. That's a terrific site. They're the same people that have Audacity, which is a great free audio recording editing program. So free mind, mind mapping. Easy to use and very powerful. Really cool. So I could see using that, listing out the characteristics. I could do it chronologically. I could see putting down a lot of different ways. Or maybe without using mind mapping or getting encumbered in software, even though I like to do that personally, it might be just easier to list those times when I didn't do what I knew I could have done or should have done for another being, not only people, but for living things. If the true imperative of our soul is to love others, right, to experience everything love, then not doing certain things for others is going to be a vibration of disharmony. When we think of ourselves and bypass or avoid or not even become aware of that opportunity to be loving, we're inserting a vibration of disharmony into our field. Another way I looked at the mind mapping was to mind map the people, the key individuals, if you will, and animals in a person's life, in my life. So I was one of seven children. So I had a mother, father, six siblings, only a few cousins that I was physically close to. Geographically, there's a better way to say that. Only a few uncles, a whole bunch of friends, and so on. And so you could just go, oh, let me just make a list of all of those people and review them. Look at those situations and see if there are opportunities to itemize negative events that I caused or you caused. That brought me to the point, because of an interest in PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, experienced by military veterans returning from war settings, but also experienced on a tremendous level by abused people here domestically, primarily women. And I thought, I wonder if remorse pertains to PTSD. Over the last year or two, the thought about PTSD in regards to the military, up to that point, had been thought that, you know, PTSD has to do with fear, fear of getting killed, fear of being injured, fear of this out in the battlefield. But in the last couple of years, they're recognizing, guess what, from listening to the people with PTSD, that they're talking about sadness, they're talking about guilt, they're talking about regret, not fear. And so now you turn around and go, maybe the experience of remorse is what would be a key curing step for PTSD. To have remorse for what we saw or did or didn't do in those situations will lead to the lifting of PTSD. So I recapped, okay. What ways are there to identify remorse, I'll say, opportunities? By looking at the ego characteristics of that list that we've displayed, looking at the key people and animals and things in our lives, and then trying chronological listing of events that may have produced negative effects for which we could use or experience remorse. I wanted to clearly, as you can hear from this talk, I wanted to understand why remorse was so necessary to our spiritual growth. And I thought I knew, and I think, but I felt if I could just go deeper and understand more, and really get it and feel with a greater degree of certainty that I understood it, then maybe I would be courageous enough to take the next step and actually engage energetically with these events and feel remorse and allow myself to heal. I want to talk about, on a personal level, one example of an action. While it was well-intended, created an undesirable result. I didn't become aware of it until much later, that of its negative impact. So I couldn't and didn't seek to repair the damage done. It was too late. So even though this event occurred in about 1976, quite a long time ago, whenever it comes into my awareness, I feel bad about it. So that says that energy pattern of that event still exists within my field, not just an intellectual thing, but it has emotional content as well. I think the feelings of guilt and regret for that event and the results that I caused and the bad feelings about myself for not understanding beforehand the consequences of my planned action still, how many years later, since 1976? That's a whole bunch of time. Right, 35, almost 40 years. I had expectations, I had intentions, but I didn't communicate to anybody, either of them. I just thought of them. I was certain, I knew the need for this course of action, and I took it. Here's what happened. My then wife Marie's Uncle Henry, her Uncle Henry was at a green thumb, and this guy could grow stuff. He was a farmer, and he was willing to teach me some things about farming when I got out of the service. I was curious about agriculture, and he was willing to teach me, taught me gave me a plot of land for a garden, taught me about fruit trees, how to prune them, as well as how to prune a grape arbor. So that was cool. I became his student, while at the same time I became his worker. I did the stuff he didn't want to do, that was too hard physically for him to do, or he didn't have the energy or the desire to do. So I became that laborer. My crime occurred in the grape arbor. I've been thinking for some time that the grape arbor needed some sort of a straw bedding on the ground to make it look nicer. There were only a few weeds that were growing, so it wasn't like it needed mulch. But I thought if straw was spread or hay was spread, it would look nicer. I wondered about that hay, and this is really my thought processes. You can see how unaware it was. There was a neighboring farmer who I knew and I saw had hay, bales of hay, stacked in his barn. So I thought about asking him for some hay, and I didn't do it. And it never even occurred to me to say, I wonder where he bought the hay, and I wonder how much it cost, and I wonder if I could afford it, and I wonder if this idea of putting hay on the ground in the grape arbor is a good idea for mulch, or it's a harmful thing to do. I never did any of that. I didn't consider if it was feasible. I just thought about doing it. But I didn't. So instead, one day I decided to clean up the grape arbor by raking it. So I raked all the stuff on the ground. I didn't have any hay, so I didn't replace what I raked. I just raked all the debris, leaves that had fallen over the years onto the ground, and raked it away. I thought I was doing a good and reasonable thing. I guess it was about a year and a half, 2 years later, that I glanced at the edge of the arbor from a distance. I was no longer living there. And I was shocked to see that the weeds literally had grown up over the top of the grapevines, right up over the top of the... I had ruined Henry's vineyard. And, no doubt, had caused him a tremendous amount of pain emotionally by doing what I did. Some years later, Henry died of cancer. I'd be surprised if that event wasn't one of the things that was a major upset to him. Henry was skilled at farming, but he wasn't skilled at expressing his emotions. So instead of expressing stuff, he held it in. So he would have had a tremendous disappointment, anger, frustration, a whole bunch of things from what had happened to his grape arbor. He would have held all of that stuff in, that toxic energy, to his disadvantage. I didn't realize how human territoriality really worked until I had a small event occur when I lived in Kansas City near the turn of the century. This is maybe 10 years ago. I had a mailbox and a post on the front edge of my property between the road of the cul-de-sac and the sidewalk. It's a little strip of grass that wasn't going to be used for anything other than mowing or a mailbox. A new house was built right next door to us, and the owner of that, Joe, put his mailbox on a few inches of my property on that same space. I could not believe my reactions. It was crazy how intense my feelings were and how violated and how outrageous my righteousness became. For land that had no value to me, I was never going to use it for anything else other than for my mailbox. It wasn't like he was hurting my feelings or doing anything. And those few inches should have had no significance. But that's not what happened. It was like stunning to me how my ego kicked in. I didn't realize it at the time what was happening. Now I can use the words ego. It was mine and nobody had a right to it. This brings me up to a second story of a second violation of Henry, for which I'm remorseful. I wanted to build a playground, and this is like 1975 or so, 76. I wanted to build a playground set for my children. I needed two vertical posts or logs to start. And so I went into the deep, deep woods on Henry's property to an area that he would never go and he would never see. And I cut down two trees out of the hundreds and hundreds that were there and trucked them out and took them to the rental property that I was on and erected those vertical posts. I never even considered asking permission to do that. Never even occurred to me. Whenever Henry would visit us, though, he would make reference to the set I built. Now, 30 years later, in Kansas City, like, yikes, based upon that experience, it is entirely possible that my action caused Henry tremendous upset that would have been beyond his understanding, just like my anger about my mailbox post was beyond my comprehension. So there, I violated his driving needs, his individuality, his territoriality. It's amazing to me. In letter 5 of Christ Returns, reveals startling truth. That explanation of the ego expressing through the personality to achieve our four driving needs makes these events more understandable to me. And the disharmony that we can cause, and what I did cause, to another, because I only thought about my own driving needs, obviously, without understanding what was propelling me forward to take my actions. But other people have these same driving needs. So if we're interacting with people and we don't realize they've got driving needs, we're the only ones on the planet with driving needs, we're going to be producing considerable upset for people. So I arrived at the idea that maybe remorse is the suffering we need to experience in order to heal. Accepting the moral anguish caused by our sowing could allow us to move on into higher levels of awareness. Okay, I've sown. Now let me feel what he feels, what he felt. Boom, that's the harvest. And maybe it'll allow us to move on. If we spend our time avoiding that harvest, remorse, we don't allow for the improving of our sowing. If we don't experience the consequences of our behavior, we don't improve. You can imagine if I put my hand on a hot stove and I didn't feel the pain, I wouldn't be learning from it. If somebody else experienced the pain of me putting my hand on a hot stove but not me, they would be suffering, but I wouldn't immediately learn and grow in awareness. On the other hand, when we do accept the effects we have caused, we learn how to better cause the effects. We go, oh, that didn't feel good. Oh, that didn't feel good to him or her. And now I'm going to learn how to cause the effects that I want. We can outgrow our ego-centered behaviors that resulted in this moral pain for us and other types of pain for other people. Having said that, what happens to people who avoid feeling remorse? And I'm not talking about psychopaths or sociopaths. I'm talking about normal people, you know, like you and me. Normal people whose ego is trying not to let them see their mistakes, on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's using those mistakes as cattle prods, almost as weapons of control. You're not doing enough. You're not doing enough. You're not working hard enough. You're right? That kind of stuff going on all the time. As our awareness increases, we can know the effects that we cause. And as we do that, ignorance is no longer the excuse we can use to explain away our behaviors. I just didn't know. Because you can look back at a lot of this stuff. It was ignorance. Lack of awareness is ignorance. I'm not talking stupidity. That's a different thing. I'm talking about lack of awareness. Ooh, I didn't know that cause would result in that effect. I didn't know by hitting my thumb with a hammer it was going to cause that pain, or more appropriately, I didn't know hitting your thumb with a hammer was going to cause you pain. That's ignorance. And if we try to deny what we've done, what we've caused, those splinters, because I think these things are, we may consciously not be aware of them, but those splinters are going to continue to exist and fester in our energy fields. And I think what happens now is we have these things in our energy field, these splinters, these unresolved pain events for which we could heal with remorse, but because we refuse to look at them, refuse to touch them, too yucky, too painful, too whatever. Now, when we go to take action, something that's going to advance us to our goals, for instance, help us to be healthier and happier and more successful and more loving, we find ourselves unable to progress in that direction because these energy fields are like, no, that's related to something I've already done and I don't want to deal with. So those things are almost like landmines in our own fields that prevent us from going in a certain direction. I believe this. Or, I think I believe this. It could be that these unrecognized, unacknowledged, and unaccepted effects that we have caused do become force fields that later interfere with our pursuit of our own goals. If that's true, that could be a tremendous asset to us to now, okay, I want to go from where I am to put a goal out there in any area, financial, health, relationship, career, you name it, family, and I can't go in that direction. I want to, but I can't go into that. It's like, maybe there's some unrecognized, unacknowledged, and unaccepted effects that we have caused that we're going to want to look for. If we know that on a soul level, not a conscious level, you know, because we're human and a lot of things we don't understand, but if we know on a soul level that we've acted in ways that are out of harmony with our spiritual natures, the ego is going to try to hide that information from us and hide it from other people, right? So we erect this facade of this persona so people won't think less of us because we want to be connected to other people. It comes with being a human being. We want to be part of a community. We want to belong. We want to be loved. In this case, though, life under the ego's control, trying to make us hide our humanity, it just creates an anxious facade or charade of hiding our humanity from others while pretending that we're better than them and unceasingly doing everything we can to prove that we're better than them. And that fear of exposure of our flaws, of our humanity, and we all have them, can prevent us from being able to express ourselves. If we can't extend our energy, it's very difficult to grow. So the imagined consequences of being truly seen by somebody else, imagined consequences are so frightening that we won't advance ourselves, we won't reach out, we won't express ourselves by what we think or feel or say or do. We're in a difficult spot. Years ago, I was taught that one of the key factors in addictions was the presence of secrets. I was helping a guy who did relationship counseling, and that's how I became aware of him. My then wife told me about him, and we were trying to save our marriage, or at least I was. And in fact, as a result of his mentoring, I realized it was never going to get better, and it gave me the insight and courage to end that 19-year marriage, for which I'm extremely grateful. But he said that secrets were a part of addictions. So he dealt with relationships, but he also dealt with addictions. He had been previously addicted to alcohol and prescription drugs and worked with people who were addicted to heroin and crack cocaine and PCP and really nasty stuff. So he said, besides secrets, addictions require this need to control everything and the tendency to make everything about oneself. Secrets, keeping secrets, control everything, and making everything about oneself. Avoiding remorse could be similar to keeping secrets, even from ourselves. You go, oh boy, that's a problem. Resisting these feelings is a problem. A movie I saw years ago when I belonged to spiritual cinema was about a man who was immortal. He was about 35 or 45 years old, but he didn't age. Every time people started to notice that he didn't get older, and they did, he would resign from whatever job he had, pack his things, and move to a new town and establish a new identity and a new career that would temporarily work until the same pattern repeated itself. So the setting of the movie was in his home. He was now packing his things, putting it into the car, and getting ready to leave town. And his peers, all college professors, as he was a college professor, came to his home. They wanted to convince him to stay and not leave, or if he refused to stay, at least explain to them why somebody so successful at doing what he was doing was giving it all up and resigning and leaving town. So during the course of this movie, the arguments and the disbelief and the explanations that he was giving and the resistance to him by other people was really fascinating. But one main point really stuck out for me is that he explained from some of his behaviors that he didn't resist. His body somehow had the ability to heal better than other people's, because he didn't hold on to stuff. He didn't resist stuff. And it was like, wow. So he put his attention on things, and he didn't resist what he saw, and he didn't fight things. He didn't find fault. He didn't refuse to accept what he perceived. He just perceived it and let it go. Tremendous compassion, tremendous patience. So it occurred to me that a tendency to resist, to hold back, to go into opposition, to not accept what is, all contribute to our bodies breaking down under the stress of things that we have refused to deal with, we refuse to release, we refuse to let go. And I thought, we've done millions of things in our lives. We've had millions and millions of thoughts and feelings and spoken millions of words, taking millions of actions and millions of inactions. But if we need to keep them secret, we are holding on to those forms of resistance. We are resisting a natural energy flow that seemed to become easily toxic. So I was looking for another framework about how to pursue remorse. And the idea of shoulda, coulda, woulda came to mind as a framework of looking at events that may have remorse connected to them. By scanning comprehensive lists of the 12 worlds, which I developed years ago, that of spiritual concepts, mental concepts, emotional concepts, physical concepts, family concepts, career concepts, financial concepts, etc., in Excel spreadsheets, to be able to look at that list of those items with shoulda, coulda, woulda as choices. Was there something I shoulda or coulda or would have done if I had been more aware? And if I could itemize those, like, And I would suggest that we have a lot of that stuff related to any areas in our lives in which we're having a lot of conflict, be that financial, be that physical, be that family, be that relationship. We're going to find a lot of stuff that we shoulda, coulda, woulda, is my thought. And if we could look at that list and go, yep, I found a few things, and I'll just choose this family. My brother George, my younger brother, died December 28th last year. I got a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas with regard to George. A lot of them. And if I would take the time, if I would be courageous enough to take the time and deal with those, and I can feel it even as I'm speaking, to allow those feelings to be felt by me, I could heal them. And what would I have done differently? If I can learn from that what I didn't do, I will advance not only George, I believe, but myself as well, spiritually. That would, if I could have a do-over, what would it be? So that idea of do-over is a cool concept. And we ought to be able to move energy that we've been stuck with, not just a matter of months in George's case, but if I go back, you know, I was 4 or 5 years old when he was born, then I've got a lot of shoulda, coulda, wouldas with regard to that little kid over these years. If we can feel remorse, we'll be able to heal. We need to understand, and I like this too, it's reassuring, that there's a section in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, in which Christ says that, you know what, we've got to have a lot of these experiences where we've chosen to act from an ego point of view and keep going and doing things and that result in pain and the need for remorse and that didn't work. So if we experience that ego-driven bonding and rejection impulses, then we can learn completely, you know what, happiness is not going to come from acting out our ego drives. When we really, really understand that, I think we're in a position to go, try that, been there, done that, remember that slang, been there, done that, tried that, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, nope, it didn't result in what I expected, and it resulted in painful lessons. It becomes much easier for us to make a commitment to, like, you know what, I think I'm going to go for Christ consciousness. That's a goal I want, and I'm going to go in that direction. If I can cleanse my consciousness of ego drives, I think that really holds a much greater promise. Maybe we can experience the pain that we've caused others and thereby heal. And if we gain awareness of our humanhood and we'll let ourselves off the hook knowing that it is how we learn. It is how we grow spiritually. It is necessary. Then we can become much more compassionate with ourselves and with other people. And then we turn around and go, you know what? Being loving and compassionate with myself is much more practical and beneficial. And being more loving and compassionate with other people is a much more practical, beneficial way of being. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I think it must take a tremendous amount of courage that I'm seeking to access to experience remorse, especially when our ego is relentlessly urging us to be perfect or better than others. And that ego doesn't allow us to admit to being the cause of harm or being wrong or being responsible for stuff that has resulted in suffering or pain for others. I think the reason that Ho'oponopono caught on is because at some deeper level, human beings realize that we have a need for and the truth that we're both part of a problem and we're part of the solution, not only for individuals, even people we don't understand and we don't know and have never met or never going to make, just the family of man. We're part and parcel. However, even Ho'oponopono can become trivial. It can be made trivial by being a superficial ritual. I said that. Instead of a deeply felt remorse that releases that trapped pain from ourselves and from other people. The unwillingness to feel leaves the energy trapped within us. Let me reiterate. The willingness to feel and let go has got to be one of the true essentials of health and happiness. Which brought me to the point now, I was wondering if feeling and letting go is the emotion, are those the emotional equivalent to eating, digesting, and releasing that we do on a regular basis on a physical level? I thought, yeah. In letter 7 of Christ's Returns, Christ says, a miserable entity dwindles and dies. A happy entity flourishes. This is a basic fact of existence. In the final analysis, each living entity feeds upon its own inner state of contentment or frustration. So look around the space that you're in. Put your attention on any one thing that you can respect for being what it is, and then feel appreciation for it, for being in your space. I did that for a chair that I have literally seen thousands and thousands of times, and admired its craft that went into it, the energy of the artisan who made it. It was like seeing that chair for the very first time. Imagine that you just did that. You have just fed a delicious vibrational meal to your emotional body. So just think of that for a second. You can put your attention on any one thing and feel love or appreciation or respect or generosity or compassion for it. It is like feeding your emotional body delicious vibrations. I think that's easy to visualize, right? Those higher frequency vibrations are what we need to thrive, not just emotionally, but it's what our spirit needs, it's what our mind needs, it's what the cells in our bodies need. But let's consider a different vibrational meal. We do something that results in pain and suffering for some other living entity. Even if we're not consciously aware that our actions cause that pain, at some deeper level, we are aware. Furthermore, if the law of cause and effect is true, we will ultimately reap a similar pain and suffering. If we refuse to look at or process or feel the effects we have caused, that's like refusing to effectively digest food or let go of what no longer serves us. On a physical level, it's like choosing a permanent low-grade stomach ache and constipation. You know, why would I hold on to that stuff that makes me feel not good and it doesn't make room for more good in my life? No one would knowingly make that choice. To try to live life, be happy and healthy, be successful, while walking around with unaddressed cysts or tumors or these accumulations of energy of regret and guilt, you think that might end up causing us despair and hopelessness and depression and other things on a physical, emotional level? I think so. John Gray, you probably know him as the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. He also wrote a book, What You Feel, You Can Heal. If we can feel our own effects, I'm convinced we will more quickly be better at causing love, knowing love, and feeling love. Remorse could be a great opportunity for us to heal on every level. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive, minds, and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.